I work it in a coal mine. Things are pretty black. But tonight the treats on me, I cash at my paycheck.
I always have to laugh, but I work it in a coal mine. Things are pretty black. All right. Good morning, everybody. Gesundheit to you. That's what Spike Jones is singing. Thanks for being here today. This kind of funny. I know Dr. Stoner has a lot of good memories. He used to dance to Spike Jones, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right.
When he was what, late 40s, early 50s? That was kind of when he was around,
well,
right?
40s? It'd have to be early 50s. I wasn't dancing. I wasn't old enough.
No. I realized that. I watched, actually, I wanted to see something of Spike Jones, and I went on YouTube, and I actually saw in one of the Jerry Lewis's
telephones.
1952, they were there.
Is that right?
They did a live performance, and Dean Martin was kind of a co-host, and
sure,
they were just laughing. It was just so much fun.
I bet it was.
So it's one of those things. Anyway, Spike Jones makes you laugh. I mean, what they did, what these guys did.
He's on YouTube now?
Yeah, you can find almost everything on YouTube. So
sure.
I was just surprised. Sometimes you don't see, you just hear the music without pictures, but these were live pictures.
Yeah.
Well, not live, but they were pictures. Anyway, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the program. This is Gesundheit with Jacobus. I am Jacobus Hollewein. With me in the studio, you just heard his voice, Dr. Gary Stoner, who is just an incredible researcher who on his LinkedIn site says that he is retired. I don't know what that means in your case, because you never retire. You just love what you do.
Pretty much, but I'm not fully retired yet.
Yeah, but you pick and choose.
Montana State University.
You do some MSU?
I do some work at MSU, yes.
And but you don't travel that much anymore.
Not as much, no.
Yeah.
Not nearly as much.
You enjoyed the traveling?
I enjoyed it quite a bit
early
on, and then after a while it got sort of old.
Yes, I take that.
One hotel after another.
And time changes and stuff.
Typically, we didn't have a lot of time. If you went to a meeting, it was a two-day affair, and you go in the night before, have a nice dinner, and have 2 days of meeting, then fly out the next day. And sometimes you would have a day or so to see the more of the country that you were visiting, or
whatever
it was,
yeah,
or the city,
yeah,
here in the U.S. But oftentimes it was just pretty much in and out kind of thing.
Yeah. Hmm.
I would actually like to go back and see some of those places and spend more time.
Yeah.
And see what I missed.
Mm-hmm.
But it was enjoyable at the time.
Yeah.
Mostly.
I got a couple questions for you on text, Dr. Stoner. This is the first one. This is probably a first hour question, but how dangerous are repetitive dental x-rays in causing cancer?
I don't know the actual data on that, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I've heard that, x-rays, as you know, cause damage through production of oxidative radicals that I talked about earlier.
Yeah.
And whether it's UV light induced damage in skin, or whether it's x-rays in tissue, and they also can cause some formation of certain DNA adducts in tissues that you can measure. How much you would have in terms of dental x-rays to cause cancer, I suspect would be quite a significant dose over time. You'd have to obviously change the oral epithelium cells in the right genes in order to lead to cancer development. So
okay.
I suspect it's very rare, but I could see where it certainly might occur. Yes.
Yeah,
but I don't know the data. I don't know what's been compiled there.
All right. Then we have another one. I read somewhere that a 72-hour fast, a three-day fast, resets the immune system and enhances immune response. What is the doctor's opinion?
Well, I don't know how that would be the case, but I would suspect that if you had certain injurious food habits that would diminish the immune response by stopping the use of eating for a period of time,
and
then restarting it might be healthy, but I honestly don't know. I don't know
Well, one thing that I can think about.
Maybe you would know that better than me.
I think that if you do a fast, you have to do more than just not eating.
Yeah.
So if you drink, what do you drink? Do you just drink water? Do you drink water with lemon?
True.
Do you put oxygen in the water?
Yeah.
I also suggest that when people fast, that they help the body eliminate toxins by doing colonics or enemas.
Yeah.
So that you eliminate, because the pressure from above is gone, you're not eating anymore, so what is in there stays in there. At 98.6 degrees, in a moist, dark environment, all kinds of things can start to grow.
Yeah.
So it could actually have an adverse reaction to the body. So I would recommend that people really help the body eliminate. I personally would not propose laxatives, but if you want to use a laxative for a day to just eliminate the small intestine as quickly as you possibly can, and then work with colonics or enemas to empty the colon, I think then you give the body a clean pipe, so to say, so that when you are fasting, you are literally giving the body a chance to focus on healing instead of fighting new toxins that are entering the bloodstream.
Well, thinking about that question a little bit more, what's emerging, of course, is the importance of the bacteria in the bowel.
Yes.
And the ratio of anti to pro-inflammatory bacteria in the bowel, and the effect that that has on your immune system. So if you fasted for a few days and cleared everything out, so to speak, as you say, theoretically, if you had an emergence of more anti-inflammatory bacteria back into your system, that this would be maybe protective against on the immune response, because the gut is really where a lot of your immunity comes from. It's extremely important.
Yeah.
And what's important in that is the relative ratio, in fact, of anti to pro-inflammatory bacteria. And so some of the probiotics, of course, that have lactobacillus in them, which is a anti-inflammatory bacteria, that's one of the reasons that they're given, is to change that ratio and reduce the amount of inflammation.
Yeah.
And then that, in turn, probably would enhance the immune response.
Yes.
So I suspect if this works, that's the mechanism.
Huh. So the lactobacillus bacteria have more of an anti-inflammatory response than the bifidobacteria? Doesn't matter. You just mentioned lactobacillus.
Yeah, I think both of them
are
anti-inflammatory bacteria, as far as I know.
Yeah.
But there are a number of bacteria in the bowel that are known to be pro-inflammatory.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Uh-huh. And so they probably are responsible for a lot of the diarrhea that you have, the pain that you have in the bowel, because they develop localized inflammation within the bowel itself. Plus, they also, I suspect, influence maybe the lymphoid cells within the bowel.
Yes.
Either enhance them or diminish their anti-inflammatory effects.
Okay. Good.
So that's a good question for Seth Walk at Montana State University, who does a lot of work with.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, does a lot of work with looking at the microbes in the bowel.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a fascinating new area, relatively new area of cancer research.
The I need to double check here what I'm all going to ask you. Are you able to stay a little bit longer? You said you were going to leave at 10 o'clock.
I can stay longer, sure.
Okay,
good. Because I'm not through my...
No, I was going to say you're not by far through all the things that you wanted to talk about. And...
probably talking too much.
Well, no, it's all really good. It's very interesting, and I know there's going to be some very interesting things coming up, folks, as we talk about CAR T cells, CAR T cells is a new development in it. Well, it's called chimeric antigen receptor cells, T cells, and we're going to talk about dendritic cells as well in the research to help fight cancer. But the immune health in general, there's a lot going on. Now, why is it often that when people are diagnosed with cancer, that we're so worried about the lymphatic system? Because it's all over the place and it will carry stuff very quickly to anywhere in the body?
Well, when tumor cells get metastasized, in other words, they get away from the primary site of the tumor and go to other sites in the body, one mechanism by which they metastasize is going to, into the lymph. And so frequently you'll find that the lymph nodes are examined nearby a developing tumor.
Yeah.
And if the lymph nodes have tumor cells in them, then you know that the tumor has metastasized beyond the primary site and it's gone into the lymphoid system.
Okay.
And that's always not good.
But how do you know how far that is? Often women with breast cancer, that's where it has started the most. And when women have been diagnosed with breast cancer and they have a lumpectomy or mastectomy, specifically mastectomy, they also often remove lymph nodes out of the arm, right? And out of the arm. But if you take that out with the lymph tissue, doesn't that spread a lot faster than what these doctors can take out? It may already have been spreading all over the place.
It may have, but it's important to see whether indeed that's the case. So you need to harvest lymph nodes and examine them to see how far has this spread. Is it just the first node? Is it a whole series of nodes that are positive? That has implications for the prognosis of the disease.
But how fast does a cancer move through a lymph node? Now, a lymph node is always moving stuff around.
Yeah, the cancer cells get into the lymph nodes and grow there.
Yes.
And I suspect in most cases that process takes quite a bit of time.
It does?
Yes. I mean, cancers depends on the type of cancer. Many of them are years in development. They don't occur just like this.
You bet.
Some are more aggressive than others.
Yeah.
And usually those that are more aggressive are those that have more mutational events in the cells that make them more aberrant in terms of normalcy, and they proliferate more rapidly.
Yes.
And therefore they have a greater propensity to metastasize.
Okay.
And in some cases that's very rapid. There's a tumor, for example, called undifferentiated polymorphic sarcoma.
Okay.
That can occur in the body, and that particular tumor metastasized frequently in the lung. That can occur very quickly.
Good.
Melanomas are frequently, rapidly metastasized.
Okay.
There are others that are slower, and I don't know that within a given tumor type, different tumors will have a greater propensity or a lesser propensity to metastasize. And with different frequencies. Yeah.
When you, folks, 522-8255, don't want to take away your opportunity to talk to Dr. Gary Stoner, who is my guest today, as we talk about immunotherapy. If you have any questions, please call the studio or text us at 266-7617. We'd be very happy to answer your comment or question. If there is something that really has been on your mind, please, by all means, this would be a good show to bring it up. Dr. Stoner, when you look at the different cancers, there's cancers, you can have all kinds of cancers. What are the top three cancers that actually exist? Not the ones that get most fame, you know, that are most popular to talk about, but what are the three leading forms of cancer?
The major cancer killer in both men and women worldwide.
Yeah.
Lung.
Lung is number one.
Yeah, that's number one.
Okay.
Number two, in terms of prevalence, is stomach.
So the most devastating is lung. That's what you say?
Most devastating is lung.
Most devastating, okay.
Yeah. Well, it's the one that kills more people than any other type of cancer.
Okay. And the most prevalent?
The most prevalent, of course, is skin.
Really?
But we don't worry, by far, of any other kinds of cancers. But we don't worry as much about skin because it's more treatable.
Okay.
So you frequently, when people talk about nasty cancers, they don't talk about skin, but of course melanoma is a real bad actor.
You bet.
Most of the rest of the basal and squamous cell carcinomas can be quite treatable.
Sure, okay.
So the most prevalent is skin, certainly.
Uh-huh.
But in terms of killing, certainly lung is number one.
Yeah.
Worldwide. In women, number two is breast.
Yeah.
And then in this country, not throughout the world, but in this country, it's breast cancer, lung, breast, and then I think, I'm not really sure.
Prostate?
Exactly what, in men.
How devastating?
Prostate's quite devastating in men, yes.
Now, so then I want to ask you, is it prostate cancer, or do men primarily die once it's spread to the bones and it becomes bone cancer?
Yeah, that's not really bone cancer. It's still prostate cancer in bone.
Right, but if it would just be isolated to the prostate, I think the prognosis for healing are a lot better than when it metastasizes.
Oh, no question about that. So if it's localized, it's much more treatable if you remove the prostate, or if you treat it by radiation. Frequently it can be cured if it's localized. When it metastasizes, it's a little more difficult to treat, certainly.
Right.
So third one in women is colon.
Okay.
Yeah, and in men, it's I believe it's lung, prostate, and colon. In terms of the major cancer killer.
So for women, it's breast and colon.
Yeah, it's women. It's lung, breast, and then colon.
Lung, breast, colon. Okay.
That's correct. And in men, it's lung, prostate, and colon.
Okay. Well, I'm not surprised, colon, but that is one that doesn't get a lot of attention. People in our store, digestive issues are probably the most addressed issues when people come in. Digestive problems.
Yes.
And I am not surprised. We have an abundant food industry.
Yes.
That has really exploded. I mean, I remember from when I was young, and I'm a lot younger than you are, but I remember the little mom and pop stores and in the Netherlands, and the grocery stores were very infrequent.
Yes.
Now you have in a town like this 5, 6, 7 grocery stores.
Yes.
They're open almost 24/7. People can get food whenever and whatever they want.
That's correct.
Doesn't matter where it has grown on the planet. To me, that has been such a drastic change as far as what we eat, how much we eat, how often we eat, what type of food we eat in such a short time, let's say 50 years, that I don't think our body has been able to adjust to it quickly enough. And because of that, the body is screaming out, how do you want me to do this?
Yeah.
And therefore, I feel that cancers have become more prevalent because we put stuff in our body that have so many, when you look at the food label, what's in it, there are so many preservatives, artificial colors and flavors, artificial, certain synthetics almost that you put in there. You go like, why is this in here? All because it has to get certain shelf stability. And we open the package and we think it's fresh and we just eat it and it isn't. And our body has to deal with whatever we're trying to put in the mouth. So colon cancer, stomach cancer, these are all, to me, understandable because that's your... I always say the first line of defense is what do you put in your mouth, right? The second line of defense is your whole digestive tract.
Yeah.
So the digestive tract will let you know what is good or not good by either you throw it up or you have heartburn or indigestion or you have diarrhea, constipation, gas, bloating, you have issues, but the body says, this doesn't sit well with me. You're going to have to throw that out. I don't think that 100 years ago, people didn't have these kind of problems that we're dealing with today.
No. Well, with stomach cancer, the major factor that causes that disease is a bacterium called Helicobacter pylorus.
Okay.
Helicobacter pylorus colonizes the epithelial lining of the stomach, leading to significant inflammation within the stomach. And this inflammation can lead to the formation of ulcers. And this was brought to our attention by some Australian physicians years ago. Nobody believed them. About 8 years ago, they got the Nobel Prize for this observation, because okay. It's true.
Uh-huh.
And within the ulcers and around the ulcers, you can have, with this continuing inflammation and infection with the organism, you can actually develop stomach cancer.
Yes.
Now, worldwide, there's a very high percentage of people who are infected, more than 50% worldwide. In this country, it's probably somewhere between 30 and 40%.
People who are affected with the Helicobacter pylorus?
Helicobacter pylorus, that's right.
And so it may not have turned into a cancer, but it is existing, and it may turn into something bad.
It may cause the changes in the stomach lining ultimately lead to cancer. That's correct.
Okay.
And much of it's due to the fact that it's strongly pro-inflammatory. So there's a significant inflammatory response developed against this bug, and it's chronically there, and that ultimately can lead to the formation of stomach cancer. And, of course, so stomach cancer worldwide is the third most prevalent cancer and the second cause of cancer death worldwide.
Wow.
It's not very a prevalent cause of cancer death in this country, in part because the fact that we have a prolific use of antibiotics that will kill out that organism. And also there are certain foods that can help kill the bug.
Okay.
So it's not just always the bug itself. It's the bug in conjunction with high salt in the diet, for example.
Yeah.
Which is a significant factor in countries like Japan. China.
Really?
Yeah. So those and certain smoked meats, smoked fish, so forth can contribute. So there's a series of carcinogens in smoked fish. We call them polycyclic hydrocarbons. That actually also contribute to the disease.
Huh. We're going to take a short break. I keep saying short break. There's only two breaks in an hour. So this is the news break. We're going to take care of that. Dr. Gary Stoner, my guest. This is very good information. I very much appreciate him being here. Stay tuned. We'll be back for hour number three.
Don't forget to breathe while you're listening to Gesundheit with Jacobus. Stay tuned.